Welcome to episode 41 of the 3M Fear podcast. In the small town of Klingenberg, Bavaria, Germany, there lived a girl named Annelise Michelle. Annelise was a bright and likable girl who grew up in a strict Catholic family. She was born on 21st September 1952 to Joseph and Anna Michelle, a Roman Catholic couple. Annelise was a very religious person. She attended Mass twice a week. At the age of 16, something frightening happened. Just as the clock struck midnight, Annelise was suddenly awakened by what she could only describe as this immense pressure that was against her stomach. She felt as if there was a force that was pushing her into the mattress. Panic seized her. She tried to move, but her body was paralyzed. When she tried to call out for help, her mouth wouldn't move. As this terrifying experience continued, Annelise realized that she had just urinated on herself in the bed. She began to pray to God, feeling as if her life was slipping away. But just as the clock struck 12:15, the pressure on her body disappeared. Annelise was tired, exhausted. She felt as if she had just run a marathon. Her tongue was sore and strained. Hello and welcome to the 3AM Fear podcast. I'm Nikita Ferrau, mystery and thriller author. On this podcast, I talk about real crimes and real people. Due to the graphic nature of some of this content, listener discretion is advised. You can find the episode show notes on my website 3amfear.com. Let's get started. Her family was deeply religious, with her father even considering becoming a priest, and three of her other aunts had become nuns. Joseph's mother wanted him to study and become a priest, but in order to become a priest, he needed to know Latin, and Latin was something that he was not very strong with. When his mother realized that Joseph had no hopes of becoming fluent in Latin, she agreed to let him go to a trade school and join the family business, which was a sawmill owned and operated by his father. To be honest, his father always wanted that, and now that Joseph joined, his father was very happy. Joseph learned from a master carpenter who worked with his father, but when he was just 22 years old, World War II broke out in Germany and he was drafted into the army. For several years, Joseph was involved in fighting for both the Eastern and Western fronts during the war. However, towards the end of the war, he became a prisoner of the war in the American custody. Fortunately, his captivity did not last that long, and he was released when the fighting came to an end. In the September of 1945, Joseph returned home. Later on, Joseph would go to Munich to pursue his education, completing his master's exam in 1948. He also took over the family business in the same year. Now, Annelise's mother, Anna Ferg, was born in 1920 into a family with a long history of operating a sawmill, the same exact business. But her father's sawmill faced a lot of financial problems. Before marrying Joseph in 1950, Anna had been working for her father's business. Now, the issue here came when it was time for Anna to marry Joseph. Anna was already a mother to a 2-year-old girl named Martha. Apparently, Anna had her child before getting married from another person whom no one knows to date. Now, Anna came from a very religious family, so having a child outside marriage was a very bad thing. This was seen as a kind of shame that she brought upon her family. And so when Anna got married, she was not allowed to wear white to her wedding, but she had to wear a black veil because it was seen as a disgrace to her family. When Annalise was born in 1952, her mother would be praying to God, asking for forgiveness because of Martha. Annalise always saw her mother praying to God, asking for forgiveness, and that's where Annalise also got this habit of praying to God and asking for forgiveness, not only for herself, but also for others. Tragically, when Martha was just 8 years old, she passed away because of complications from a surgery to remove a kidney tumor. Annalise was a very kind-hearted and deeply sensitive girl. Losing her older sister devastated her. After Martha died, Annalise, who was now only 4 years old, became the oldest sibling. Anna would later go on to give birth to 3 more daughters: Gertrude Maria in 1954, Barbara in 1956, and Rose in 1957. The family lived in a modest but sturdy two-story house near Joseph's sawmill in Klingenberg. While the house was described as modest, many saw it as a very expensive house. I mean, it was not that expensive, but it was much better than a lot of people who lived in that area. Anna rejected the modern views of the Catholic Church that came with Vatican II. There was a council of bishops and religious leaders who decided to reverse beliefs and traditions for the church. Anna taught her daughters to do the same. During this time, the Catholic Church began to move away from its previous beliefs, saying that demons were real. Instead, it started adopting a more theological perspective, like saying demons were more of a mythological creature than real. Before the age of 5, Annalise had so many health problems. She had mumps, measles, and even scarlet fever. She would be so sick that she had to lose 1 year of her school. Now, despite all this, she was very good at her studies. She wanted to be a school teacher in a small town, and that was her dream career. Her mother was very supportive of her dreams, and she encouraged her to study more and to become a teacher. Typically, girls would complete only 3 years of secondary school before getting married or joining work. In 1965, Annalise started attending the gymnasium, which is a secondary school in Germany. She performed very well in school, especially in Latin, the one language that her father was not very good at. According to her mother, Annalise was very good at Latin. When Annalise was only 16 years old, in September of 1968, something strange began to happen with her. She was a very delicate and sensitive girl, but sometimes, during Mass, she would suddenly become so tired, so overwhelmed. Her parents thought that she would be a good teacher and this was the perfect career path for her because Annalise was very empathetic. As I said, when she was born, her mother would always pray to God, begging for forgiveness because she had a child before marriage. And Annalise started carrying the same beliefs. Even at a young age, she believed that it was her duty to pray and beg God to forgive other people's sins. When she learned that these homeless people and drug addicts would sleep on the road, on the cold ground, Annalise started sleeping on the ground also. At the age of 16, something frightening happened. Annalise suddenly blacked out in school. When she regained consciousness, her expression was blank. Her eyes were vacant. She wandered around as if she was like in a trance-like state. She had no memory of what had happened to her. That same night, just as the clock struck midnight, Annalise was suddenly awakened by what she could only describe as this immense pressure that was against her stomach. She felt as if there was a force that was pushing her into the mattress. Panic seized her. She tried to move, but her body was paralyzed. When she tried to call out for help, her mouth wouldn't move. As this terrifying experience continued, Annalise realized that she had just urinated on herself in the bed. She began to pray to God, feeling as if her life was slipping away. But just as the clock struck 12:15, the pressure on her body disappeared. Annalise was tired, exhausted. She felt as if she had just run a marathon. Her tongue was sore and strained. The next morning, Annalise would go on to tell her mother everything that happened the previous night. Her mother told her to take some rest and not go to school that day. She thought that maybe her daughter had been pushing herself too much, trying to study a lot, and that's why she was becoming sick. She had no idea what had just happened to Annalise. But Annalise couldn't shake this feeling that something was not right. She became stressed, scared, dreading every night whether this would happen again. But days turned into weeks and then months, but nothing happened and Annalise relaxed. The Christmas holidays and final exams arrived. Annalise had already forgotten everything that happened to her that night. 11 months later, in August of 1969, another episode occurred, and Annalise's worried mother decided to take her to two doctors, Dr. Watt and a neurologist named Dr. Luthi. They conducted several tests, including an EEG, which is a brain scan, but they found nothing unusual with her. They thought that maybe this was some type of seizure. Now, the epileptic seizures, which is the tonic-clonic seizures that they thought that Annalise had, has two phases. The tonic phase, where all the muscles stiffen, they become very tight and you feel as if you are not able to move. Mostly, the patient would end up biting their tongue or cheek. And the clonic phase is when the arms and legs start to jerk. These seizures usually last a few moments and afterwards the patient would lose control of their bladder or bowel and they would usually be exhausted. Now this describes exactly what Annalise felt that night. So far, the doctors felt that maybe this was what was happening with Annalise and so did she and her mother. After everything that happened, Annalise went back to her life, her school, her church, her family. But soon, she started to feel sick. It all began with a sore throat. Soon after, she had to remove her tonsils. Then came her other conditions, including sharp chest pains, breathing difficulties due to inflammation of the tissue. I'm not going to go through every detail of how she felt, but she was having a lot of health issues. And soon after, she got tuberculosis, followed by pneumonia. The doctors couldn't pinpoint at anything and say, this is the reason that all of this is happening to her. As her health started to decline, she had to leave school and by Christmas, she was bedridden at home. In February, Annalise was admitted to a nearby hospital, but her condition did not improve. In February of 28th, she was transferred to a sanatorium in Mittelburg, a mountain region in southern Bavaria, specializing in juvenile lung diseases. Despite living with a lot of girls her age, Annalise had a lot of problem adjusting in that place. She felt very lonely, homesick. She didn't want to be there. She missed her family. Her family would write letters to her and she would do the same. But she just wanted to go home. During her evaluation with Dr. Luthi, Annalise's tonsils became inflamed. Because of all these health issues, Annalise was forced to miss an entire school year in 1969 to 1970. She always complained. She was bedridden. She didn't want to be there. She wanted to do a lot in life. But unfortunately, she couldn't. She would complain to her mother about all of this and her mother would not respond to her but would just start praying the rosary. This did not help Annalise. In February of 1970, Annalise was admitted to a specialized children's hospital in Aschaffenburg. This place was focused on her lung diseases. Her condition did not improve and she was transferred to a tuberculosis clinic in Mittelburg, Bavaria. A lot is said online about Annalise. People would usually say that because of all these problems, Annalise was pushed into sadness and depression. But according to her roommate, a young girl named Monica, this didn't last long. Because in real life, Annalise was a very positive and upbeat person. She was mentally very strong. It was just that she was having health issues back to back, and all she wanted to do was get back on her feet. On June 3, 1970, Annalise experienced her third seizure, which was quite similar to the previous two. It happened around midnight. She was deep asleep when suddenly her sleep paralysis kicked in. She felt as if this heavy weight was pressing down on her. This time also, she urinated. Her screams after this episode got all the clinic staff to come running, and the other patients awoke. A few days later, Annalise had another unusual experience. While she was reciting the rosary, she suddenly smelled violets and began to feel this sudden sense of euphoria. Her trance-like state was interrupted when some fellow students asked her if she was all right. It has to be noted that her hands were once again locked tight, similar to a cat opening its claws. The feeling of excitement continued throughout the day, and Annalise believed that this was a sign from the Virgin Mary. On August 11, 1970, another EEG was performed, and it showed that everything was normal with her. After being away from her family for almost 6 months, Annalise was finally allowed to go back home. But her younger sisters noticed that something had changed. Annalise was no longer this happy-go-lucky girl. She was now moody, detached, and sometimes even impatient. When Annalise entered her room for the first time, after spending so much time at the hospital, she found herself not happy. She no longer had this mental capacity to hang out with her friends, to gossip with them, or to roam. She didn't want to do any of those things. Annalise was now being haunted by dark faces. She became more devoted than ever. She was determined that no matter what happens, she was going to pray to God and reach heaven. She was convinced that whatever was happening to her was the work of the devil. These visions would sometimes be accompanied by a terrible smell, described as burning fecal matter, basically burning poop. In September of 1970, Annalise went back to her school. She had missed so much because she couldn't go because of her sickness, and now she was finally back to her class. Her old friend Maria was surprised at how different Annalise had become. She saw that because of her sickness, Annalise had now become quite withdrawn. She was not that excited to be with her friends. She also noticed that Annalise had started to pray a lot, much more than before. In the spring of 1973, strange things began to happen to her. Annalise started hearing these mysterious knocking sounds in her bedroom, and her sisters could also hear those noises. What was even scarier, that Annalise claimed that she could hear a voice that cursed her and threatened to send her to hell. Her mother also got worried when she saw Annalise staring at a statue of the Virgin Mary with jet black eyes, and her hands seemed to transform into something like claws. In September of 1973, during a visit to her neurologist, Dr. Luthi, Annalise described all these visions that she could see. These demon faces that were tormenting her, she believed that the devil was inside her. She also reported a foul smell like burnt feces, and other people around her also noticed this. Annalise's mother told Dr. Luthi about all the strange things that were happening in her house. And Dr. Luthi told them that maybe they should go and talk to a Jesuit priest. But later on, Dr. Luthi would say that he never said anything like this. If we go by what Dr. Luthi may have said, the family followed his advice and searched for a priest and finally found Father Alt. In November of 1973, Annalise saw a psychiatrist who diagnosed her with possible epilepsy. Doctors noticed that whatever was happening with Annalise seemed a lot similar to an epileptic seizure, and this time Annalise was given a medication called Tegredol. This was much stronger for her. As time went on, Annalise's behavior became even more strange. She slept very little, prayed all night, she ate spiders and flies, and even drank her own urine from the floor. She destroyed any religious symbol or objects on the walls, showing unusual strength by tossing her sister around as if she was just a doll. Showing even more power, Annalise held an apple in her hand and then crushed it, making it explode into fragments that scattered all around the room. Annalise's parents were scared. After seeing all this, they were sure that something was wrong with their daughter. And they begged the church to help perform an exorcism on their daughter, so whatever was there inside her that was causing all these problems would just go away. They believed that this was the only way to save their daughter. Over time, Annalise's condition didn't improve. In 1975, she faced a lot of losses. This included the passing of her grandmother and her younger sisters leaving their house. Now, one interesting thing around this time was that Annalise actually had a boyfriend, Peter. Now, Annalise did not show much of an interest or sexual desire towards him, but she did share whatever was happening with her to him. During this time, her fits continued. She would scream, throw things at Peter, her parents, all while desperately asking Father Alt to help her. During a desperate time, Annalise sent a letter to Father Alt, expressing all her feelings, saying that she felt worthless and she needed some help. She begged him to pray for her. After Father Alt read this letter, he visited her on July 1st, and her condition was horrible. She was in a hysterical state. After he visited her, her condition became even worse. Annalise would lay on her bed, straight, and when she tried to walk, she would be unable to bend her knees. She continued to have these frequent outbursts where she would scream, growl, and even physically attack the people around her. Father Alt could see that something was wrong. He decided to go to the bishop, and finally, a Jesuit priest named Adolf Rodewick became involved. Father Rodewick was a priest who was respected as an expert in exorcisms, and he firmly believed that Annalise was possessed. The bishop, after much consideration, finally granted permission for an exorcism to begin in September of 1975. He brought in an experienced priest in his mid-60s named Father Arnold Renz to assist Father Alt in the exorcism of Annalise. They would perform this exorcism using the ancient rites that were 364 years old. However, there was one condition. The bishop ordered that the entire exorcism procedure should be kept in the strictest confidence. No one other than the priests involved would know what happened behind those closed doors. On September 24, 1975, the first exorcism session took place. Some of these sessions were recorded, resulting in a total of 42 audio recordings. These recordings were known to be deeply disturbing. And trust me, you don't want to hear them. In the fall of 1975, the first exorcism took place. Annalise's parents, a few friends, and her boyfriend, along with the priests, were present. During the exorcism, Annalise cried and moaned, feeling as if her entire body was on fire. Three men had to hold her down as she thrashed and kicked and even bit them. The priest then sprinkled her with holy water. After this, Annalise started to scream bad words and howl like a dog. After witnessing Annalise's experiences, the priests believed that there was not one, not two, but multiple different entities that were inside her body. These spirits were said to be the following. First is Cain, a biblical figure who murdered his brother Abel in the book of Genesis in the Bible. The second is legion, an evil spirit exorcised by Jesus Christ himself in the New Testament. Judas, the disciple who famously betrayed Jesus. Nero, an emperor of Rome known for his ruthless actions. Valentin Fleischmann, a disgraced priest from the 1500s, whose actions and history would be told for generations to come. And finally, Hitler, the infamous dictator whom we all know today. Father Alt was shocked because he was sure that Annalise had no prior knowledge of Valentin or his shameful acts or anything connected to him. So he was shocked when Father Fleischmann spoke through her. The priest believed that Satan himself, known as Lucifer, had possessed her. This caused him to tell the others that they had to help her as soon as possible, because the condition was now very serious. Now, in cases of possession, that is, in order to understand whether a person is possessed or not, the following things have to be seen. First is, the most common, the possessed person would not go near any holy object, especially a cross. You would also see in movies where the crosses on the walls would turn upside down. Another sign is that the demon would know things that no one else did, especially the person who was possessed. In this case, Annalise had no way of knowing about this priest, but she did. Possessed person would also show incredible strength, the way Annalise tossed her sister, the way she crushed that apple. How could she do that? Finally, some may experience seizures, which look similar to epileptic fits, but they are actually not fits. They are demons inside of this possessed person. And because most of Annalise's reports came normal, the fathers were sure that she was possessed by demons. If you go through different sources, you will also notice that there are some different entities that Annalise would talk about. But because there was no proper confirmation, we are not sure if this was real or not. When the demons spoke through Annalise, this is what they said. Hitler would say that men are so beastly stupid that they believe that after death, all is finished. But life was not finished. There is a lot more to come. Judas would go on to say that because he betrayed Jesus, he was damned for eternity, and he wouldn't come out of Annalise. He warned the people that if they didn't go to church, if they didn't say their daily prayers, then they would also end up where he is. Cain said a very simple message, quote, "I have killed my brother and I am burning," end quote. Father Valentin would go on to say that he was damned because he did not perform his duties well. Nero the emperor would say that the rosary should be recited, and he would also go on to say that abortion was the same as homicide. Satan, who was the most significant among all, would say that he wanted to conquer earth. Now, there is one thing that struck my mind when I read about this, what these spirits were saying, which is, if they were actually bad spirits, if these spirits were speaking through Annalise, why would they convince people to go to church, to pray, to do good, to not perform abortion? Why would they ask people to do good if they were bad people? I'm not saying any of these are good. I'm not saying that Satan is good. I'm just asking, why would they say that do good, otherwise you will end up here? Was it that the spirits were speaking and in between Annalise would pop up and she would say, no, don't do these things, they're bad for you, you have to be good, and then the spirits would take over? Because it doesn't make sense if Satan would say, do good. Annalise's behavior would continue for months on end. She would have one or two exorcisms performed on her, each lasting for at least 1 hour. Sometimes this would go on for 4 hours. During this time, Annalise and her parents decided to stop all her psychiatric treatments, including her medication. They believed that exorcism was the only way to cure her. Throughout this, Annalise remained strong in her belief. She believed that she was meant to suffer for others' sins. She believed that whatever she was doing was right and that this was what God wanted. She even engaged in extreme fasting. She would eat less and less until she became so thin, so malnourished and dehydrated that she was almost starving for a year. Annalise's dedication to her faith was so intense that she would spend hours on her knees in prayer, which ultimately led to her injuring her tendons and even breaking her bones. As her condition worsened, she looked like she was decomposing while she was still alive. She was losing so much weight that she had almost become unrecognizable. As May arrived, Annalise's condition deteriorated dramatically. She began banging her head against the wall and even biting herself and others, causing her family to tie her up and force her to not harm herself. Annalise refused to eat, claiming that she was not allowed to. Despite being so thin that her weight was less than 80 pounds, she had so much strength that people could not tie her up. By June, Annalise's face had sunken in and she still refused to see a doctor. She had a high fever, but she still did not want to go to a doctor. On June 30th, another exorcism was performed, during which Annalise prayed to God to forgive her. In October of 1975, the priest was successful in getting rid of the demons from Annalise's body. As each spirit left her body, she vomited violently, and the priest was sure that every demon was out of her body. Now, after all of this, the priest would sing songs and say prayers, sealing the demons away from her, finally believing that Annalise was free. No matter how hard they tried, there was one demon who said that he was still in Annalise's body, but he would not say who he was. It took over a week of more exorcisms to finally get the name out. This demon was Judas. According to the demon, Mary had instructed him to stay inside Annalise, at least till Mary returned. Judas brought in unbearable suffering to Annalise. In December and January, she experienced less possession as the demon would swap identities with her. Sometimes it would be the demon, sometimes it would be Annalise talking. It was very difficult to understand whom were the priests communicating with. She would suddenly have these violent outbursts, even outside of exorcisms. In March, her condition became so worse that she was too weak to do anything. During one exorcism, she just lay in bed, conscious but unresponsive. Just before Easter in April, Annalise had a great trial before her. She said that whatever she was suffering was the same as what Jesus suffered while he was crucified. She spent more and more time in bed, just lying there, not doing anything. In May, her parents finally admitted her into a psychiatric hospital. The time that Annalise spent there, she would continue screaming. She refused to eat. She claimed that the demons were strangling her. She told her family and her boyfriend that in July, her problems would stop. After just 1 week in the hospital, her parents decided to bring her home. I have no idea why they did it. When they brought her home, her condition became even worse. She would scream, throw things at others, hit the wall. She even bit into her own skin. She tried to chew through the walls, breaking her teeth in the process. She ran her head through a glass door, but luckily nothing happened to her. She rarely slept and spent hours fighting with the demons. Father Alt invited Dr. Richard Roth to attend this exorcism and provide any medical care that Annalise might need. During the exorcism, Dr. Roth would tell her there is no injection against the exorcism. He gave no medical help to her throughout Annalise's suffering. From the very first time that Annalise faced trouble to the very last exorcism, Annalise got no medical help from an actual doctor. Her parents, the priests, her boyfriend, everyone around her believed that she was possessed by the devil, that what she needed was an exorcism. No one tried to get her actual medical help. In fact, the medicine that she was already taking for epilepsy, that was also stopped. All treatments were stopped. When Father Alt saw Annalise for the last time on June 8th, she was just wasting away. She would drink small amounts of milk and fruit juice, and he said that Annalise was going through a time where she was suffering for the sins of others. Father Renz would continue his exorcisms, and Annalise's family waited. Remember, she told that in July her troubles would end, and so they waited for July. Annalise's family, the priest, her boyfriend, they were not the only ones who stopped her from seeing a doctor. Annalise herself did not want to see a doctor. On June 30th, Annalise was exhausted. She had developed pneumonia and had a high fever. She told her mother that she was afraid. And tragically, Annalise would die in her sleep that night. She died of starvation, malnutrition, and dehydration on July 1st. Annalise unfortunately passed away at the young age of 23. She would have a total of 67 exorcisms performed on her. She weighed just 68 pounds at the time of her death. Her story was a tragic and puzzling one. After Annalise died, things did not stop there. Her parents and the two priests were accused of negligent homicide, and the case went into trial in 1978. It was believed that they were the ones who were the reason behind Annalise's death. No possession, no sickness, it was them who starved her to death. The priests were being defended by church-paid lawyers. I'm sorry, I could not find the actual pronunciation of this lawyer's name because it's German. So I'm just gonna go by his first name. The parents were being defended by one of Germany's top lawyers, Erich Schmidt, who had also defended numerous persons in the Nazi war crimes trials. Schmidt had claimed that exorcism was legal and the German constitution protected its people within their religious rights. The defense relied on eyewitness accounts and submitted the audio recordings as evidence of possession, although the court didn't seem to take this as seriously. Now the court goes by a non-religious perspective. So in this case, this scenario was presented. Annalise had the full right to decide what she wanted to do, and Annalise herself said that she didn't want to go to a doctor. She refused to eat. She wanted this exorcism to be performed on her, and so there would be no case. In a practical sense, if you see that if Annalise didn't want medical treatment, if she didn't want to eat, she could have at least been force-fed. Maybe a tube could be attached to her. Anything could have been done to save her life. But nothing was done. The people around her just waited. They performed the exorcism and they just waited as Annalise slowly withered away. Now something interesting happened. Even though Father Alt believed in this exorcism, towards the end, he actually wanted Annalise to go and get medical help to end all her suffering. On May 30th, his friend, Dr. Richard Roth, visited Annalise, claiming it was out of scientific curiosity rather than being a physician. Now the defense argued that this was a complex case because, to be honest, in one way, Annalise did not want to be treated. She didn't want any kind of help. But on the other hand, she died because of this. No people around her wanted to give her any help either. So who was in the wrong and who was in the right? Now during Dr. Roth's visit, he would go on to say that Annalise had no external injuries. But Father Renz noticed that she had a lot of bruises, a swollen cheek and black eyes, which means that something had happened to her. Now even though the doctor said that this could have been epileptic attacks, when her brain was tested after she died, it showed that Annalise had a very healthy brain. There was no problem with her. Now, this trial went on and on, especially with the prosecution on the other hand saying that Annalise had epilepsy, she had other issues, and that her parents and the priests were responsible for whatever happened to her. There are so many things that were put forward. Now, we could go on and on talking about this, but in the end, Annalise lost her life. And unfortunately, we would never know whether she was actually possessed or she had some issues that were just not detected. Because as said, this happened a really long time ago. In the medical field, a lot has improved so far. So maybe Annalise had an issue that no one knew about. That also could be a possibility. One important thing to be noted is that the prosecution presented a case saying that the medications that Annalise had been given successfully suppressed her epilepsy-like seizures. And this suppression is led to what they call as delusional psychosis associated with epilepsy. I'll explain that. They claimed that everything was working fine with Annalise, just until the exorcism started. Once the exorcism started, everything became aggravated. Because during that time, Annalise's medications were also stopped. But there is also one more thing to be noted. That was, Annalise was having visions before taking those medications. That is, before starting the medications. How did she have visions before taking the medication and during the exorcisms? That is a question that is still not answered. Basically, a series of doctors testified at the trial. And they said that Annalise died of a combination of epilepsy, mental disorders, and an extreme religious environment. The priest said that they believed and they were 100% sure that she was possessed. And this is what led to her death. Her parents were also convinced that she was possessed. In fact, even after Annalise died, her mother would go on to say that whatever happened to Annalise was the right thing. The exorcism was the right thing to do. On March 30th, 1978, just before the trial began, a nun went to Annalise's mother and told her that she saw a vision of Annalise in her grave and her body had not decomposed. The mother so desperately wanted to see her daughter that she got permission to get Annalise's coffin out of her grave. But once they opened, they realized that her body had decomposed. Hundreds of people came to watch this. But when they opened, they saw that Annalise was in her advanced stage of decomposition. Her parents were not allowed to see her body because of all this. Annalise ended up being reburied in a new oak coffin lined with tin. On February 25th, 1978, the trial was recovered. The media, the public, everyone came to see what was going to happen. In the end, the court ruled in favor of the prosecution. They sentenced the four defendants to 6 months in prison with a 3-year suspension and ordered them all to pay the court costs. The court believed that Annalise was not capable or was not in any state of mind to make her own decisions. And because of that, everyone else made the wrong decision. There is a whole book on Annalise's case, I'll link it in the description. You can read it. It has a lot more details. Towards the end of the case, people were divided. Some believed that she was possessed. Whatever actions she did, it was because of a possession. While others believed that this was epilepsy. It was very difficult to bring people together on this case. Bishop Joseph, after everything that happened, said that he was not going to allow exorcism for everybody. He was not going to simply allow exorcism, but only in the cases where the possessed person agrees for the exorcism. And that every time an exorcism took place, a doctor would be there looking after the person. The bishop who approved Annalise's exorcism was in contact more than a dozen times with the two priests via letters. But when he was investigated, they decided not to take this further. The bishop said that whatever happened with Annalise was within the church's rights and that they did not do anything that was not in the belief or the faith of the church. Annalise's parents and the priest were found guilty, but they only served 3 years of probation, which is actually crazy. On 6 June 2013, the home where Annalise lived and died caught on fire. It was said to be arson. But some people believed that it was the devil doing it. What do you think? Do you think that this was a case of epilepsy or maybe a problem that went undiagnosed and just that the doctors could not find out? Or do you think that Annelies was actually possessed? No matter the answer, Annelies lost her life. She lost a bright future that was ahead of her. Unfortunately, there was no one who would take responsibility for this. The story of Annelies Michel would later be turned into a popular movie known as The Exorcism of Emily Rose. A lot of details about this case have been added into the movie. But no matter how scary the movie is, the real-life incident is that much horrific. A big thank you to all my fellow listeners who have been listening to all my episodes. Thank you so much. Your listens, your support means a lot. If you love my podcast, if you love the stories that I put out, then please do follow me on whichever podcasting platform you are listening from. And please do leave a rating. It will really help me a lot. You can listen to me on other platforms, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and any other podcasting platform. If you are in India, you can always listen to my podcast on Gaana or JioSaavn. If you love to listen to strange and mysterious stories, then follow me on Instagram and YouTube, where I put out reels on such stories. These are completely different from the ones that I put out on my podcast, so do follow me on them. If you love travel, you can follow me on my travel channels. I'll link them also in the description. Until then, stay kind and stay safe out there.